We have covered some ground this week in a few sessions, then I want to kind of tie things together. If you'll notice the title on the sheet you have in front of you, it is called Holding Hands, Getting Others to Help Create the Friendly Culture. And here's what we've covered so far this week. We have lifted up our eyes and we saw the need for friendliness, and we have seen the many visitors and the newcomers that God has sent our way. It's a real eye-opening experience. You're in that circumstance here in Palm Beach County in a very urban area, so close to some other big cities that you're given those kind of opportunities on a routine basis. We've taken the step and forgotten self, having the courage and resolve to engage the people that God puts into our path. We've opened our mouths and figured out what we're actually going to say to them, and overcoming the inadequacies that we feel in ourselves. And we've helped them out and assess what their needs are and how we can help them to meet those needs. And so I think it's time for those of us who are convinced and ready to go out and do that. We've spent some time here together, hopefully building that conviction to look for others, maybe the ones that haven't been here with us during the day, who can't be here, who are members of this congregation, who need that encouragement to join you in reaching out to the visitors and newcomers that come this way. You know, when I think about Bible characters that fit into various areas of examination of subjects, and I think about who it is that was really good at this, at getting other people connected to Jesus, who comes to your mind? Who was somebody who was really good at getting people to Jesus? Say it again, louder. Paul certainly was good. Somebody that I associate with Paul would have been also a fine answer. Who got Paul connected with the church? Barnabas. And what was his nickname? The son of discouragement, right? I was making sure that you can hear over your chewing. The son of encouragement, right? And I think he was great. But I believe that there was one who was more consistently, there's not much, Andrew, there he is. And it's John that tells us about Andrew. And I think that's magnanimous. They might have been competitors in the fishing world. And yet John gives us a glowing report about the kind of connector that Andrew was. Can you think of who Andrew brought to Jesus? He began at home, right? The lowest hanging fruit, the ones that we have perhaps more influence over than others. He says, we found the Messiah. John chapter 1, verse 40 and 41. Who else did he connect to Jesus? While another apostle saying, Lord, how are we going to feed this crowd? What does Andrew do? Here's this little boy. He's got some loaves and some fish. And he brought him to Jesus. That's in John chapter 6, verse 8 and 9. And do you remember, there's another apostle. And there's another encounter where Andrew brings people to Jesus. But where did they go first? And who were they? Remember those Greeks? At the time of the festival, they come and they tap Philip and they said, sir, we would see Jesus. And what does he do? He goes, Who can I get to help me do this? And it was Andrew. And Andrew took those Greeks to Jesus. John chapter 12, verse 22. He was always connecting people to Jesus. Now the difference for us is that we're trying to go and get people who are already connected to Jesus and go with them to get others and to try to connect them to Jesus. All right, so what are the best strategies for accomplishing that objective that we have? Deborah Tannen, and it's funny to quote her in this, she wrote a book entitled The Argument Culture. It's a good book. It's going to lead you to a different application than we're talking about today, but she's the one that has written about what she calls the harmful cultural mentality of the self versus society. She says, our culture has created the narrative that it's the individual self against society, as society imposes demands that conflict with the individual. And she said that Asian and African cultures believe that self exists only in relation to others. That if you look in that cultural phenomenon, some of that's East versus West, but also in African culture, they see themselves as the village. They see themselves as the whole. That's not how Western minds think. So often, and even so much more in the advent of the internet and the advancement of technology, we see ourselves very isolated and very individualistic. And I suppose that it is the case that either of those could be an extreme. That one could be so community-oriented, and I've done studies in those cultures before where you're trying to get them to see their need to obey the gospel, and you know, what you've got to be able to do somehow is to convert the whole family because they don't want to leave that. Because they think community. And they can do that to the detriment of their own soul. But can we also see the other extreme? If we're trying to look at our service to Christ in isolation, trying to do it all alone, that we're not going to be as effective than if we join hands and we work together in order to do that. And I think there's a passage that really helps us to get a hold of that. In Ephesians chapter 4, you know, there's in verse 11 through 16, I believe is one of the great passages for a church to get a hold of, to understand its identity and to understand its purpose. And the Apostle Paul starts out by saying, you're not to be like children, tossed to and fro and carried about by every wind of doctrine and the cunning or deceitful schemes of men, but speaking the truth in love may grow up into Him into all aspects, even into Him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies. According to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the individual, right? No, causes the growth of the body to the building up of itself in love. So Paul says, you are a body that is to be connected, but each individual is to do what they can to help the body to grow. There's a false message out there that you are to reject, but there's a true message that you are to band together and to share with others. And where does that begin? Now, it is not exclusive. It's not even primarily what happens in the building, but here is an opportunity that we share together. When you go out to the restaurant or when you go to the bank or when you go into the department and grocery stores, you and on your job and in your families and in your neighborhoods, you're building individual opportunities. And as you succeed, you bring them at times, into the assembly. And you're counting on one another to help make that a stronger and better opportunity. But then there are people who randomly show up in addition that you need one another. In order to make that be effective. That's growing up in Him into all aspects. It would seem that joining hands with others will bring many folks to be a part of what we're talking about. All right, so how can we effectively work to hold hands with other members of this congregation to be more friendly? Let me give you, I think there's five. Is that what you see on your paper there? All right, here they are, five. Number one, be proactive. Formulate a list of those individuals whose hand you can grab. Now, if you think in terms of categories, what are some categories of people whose hands you can grab? All right, let me give you just a few of them. How about those that you can mentor? Have you thought about teaming up with somebody who's in the youth group? You know, I talked to David, he probably won't remember this. It's been several years ago. We were talking about philosophically how we could work to improve the education program. And he had a great idea. It was one of the first times I ever heard this talk about intergenerational togetherness and Bible class and exposing each other to one another. That seems very first century. You know, some of the ways that we've compartmentalized are a reflection of an educational trend of the last 40 or 50 years. And so to mix in with that, the idea of working together through the generations can be so helpful. Why not, if you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70s, get with a teenager and say, let's go meet this new visitor that's here today. Or how about young adults? If you're an older adult, maybe you're in the next stage of life above them. And maybe as you're building a relationship with them, and they want to know, hey, how do you raise your kids without killing them? And you've obviously not killed your kids. You know, that's somebody that you can team up with. Or how about new Christians, folks who are growing in their relationship with Christ, who are looking for mature role models? That's a group of people that you can put on your list to try to team up with to reach out to newcomers, new Christians and visitors. How about those you admire? Maybe that's kind of working toward the other end. Maybe it's a church leader Maybe it's an established or mature Christian that they may be busy with their list of 10 things to do, but one of the things on their list is to try to get exposed to those who are newly visiting the assembly. Maybe you could say, hey, can I go with you to meet whoever that is that you're seeing? How about those more introverted than you? I didn't ask this yesterday. How many of you are introverts, just with a raising of your hand, would consider yourself to be shy? Wow. There's a whole lot of extroverts in this room. Oh, no, you know what it is? You're so shy, you won't even raise your hand. All right, I figured, took me a minute. I figured it out. All right. But if you take those who are more introverted than yourself, you know what you're doing for them? You are taking the pressure off of them. Because all they've got to do is say hello. And they know that you'll help to carry the conversation, and it's not going to be on them. Number four, how about those who are new themselves? How many of you have been members of this congregation for less than 5 years? Less than 5 years. Hold them up high. All right. Even you introverts. So there are newcomers in this room, and there always are. And if you'll team up with those who are still, now think in terms of those who have just placed membership, maybe in the last few months, maybe in the last year, and they're looking for ways to be more involved. There is nothing more significant than for looking for those who need to be connected to Jesus. All right, I think about when Jesus picked the apostles. You know, there seems to be some deliberation in the way that he goes about this. He picks some ordinary folks, doesn't he? Peter, Andrew, James, and John, the common man, the blue-collar man, those fishermen. Who else does he pick? The beloved tax collectors, the most wonderful IRS agents. So we love to hang around them, right? Especially at tax season. And a religious terrorist. That'll work. And a banker, so to speak, or maybe a bank robber. So you've got this group that's together, and he brings them together deliberately. And listen to how he enlists and commissions them. He says, come and I will make you fishers of men. Matthew 4 in verse 19. In fact, walk through John chapter 1 verse 35 through 51 and see such significant ideas as come and see, follow me, and I saw you. Jesus is showing us how to be proactive. He was working his list. He wasn't just trying to greet and welcome visitors. He was trying to change lives. And that's what you're trying to accomplish by being a friendly church. You're trying to accomplish transformation. Be proactive. Number two, be spontaneous. Grab people in the moment. See, this isn't just about being programmatic. Let's say you have your A list of folks that you would like to collaborate with, those lists I mentioned a moment ago, and you can't find any one of them. That's not a problem. Just grab somebody. In fact, that might work out even better. It may be that that person needed the encouragement that you're giving them, and you didn't even have any idea that they did. Think about how easy it is to grab somebody in the moment. How would you do that? Maybe you'd say something like, I'd like you to meet Bob Doe. He's new to the community, and he is here for the first time today. Bob, this is one of our fine Palm Beach Lakes members, Rob Rowe. Or, Rob, can I borrow you for just one quick moment? Rob, this is Bob. You can kind of see how that works out, right? All right. Be spontaneous. Number three, be resilient. Realize that some may not be receptive to what you're asking of them. Be resilient. You know, we need to guard against discouragement in trying to get others to be on board with us. And there was a time when the enemies of God were trying to interfere with their work. Do you remember in the book of Nehemiah, chapter 6, verse 1 through 8? A memory, by the way, you were to have Dan Winkler this week. I told you his dad, Wendell Winkler, was the head of the Bible department when I was at Faulkner University. And he came in one day and he made a reference to the plains of Ono. And there were some guys in the classroom who were already in full-time preaching, who were in those classes. I won't rat them out. You might know some of their names. And he saw the looks on our faces, and he goes, do you not know what I'm talking about with the plains of Ono? What Bible book is that? What Bible book is that? Good, okay. So I don't feel bad. You know how you feel right now? That's how I felt in the Bible classroom that day. That's in the book of Nehemiah. In the book of Nehemiah, you have these enemies of God that are trying to stand in the way of God's people doing the work. of rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem, which was done, by the way, in 52 days. They used deception, persistence, gossip and innuendo, false rumors, fear tactics, and God tells us what their motive was. In Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 9, through the inspired writer Nehemiah, he says, "For all of them were trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen our hands." Now let's step back for a moment. If you go up to somebody and say, "Hey, come with me to meet this new member," and for some reason they happen to say in that moment, there may be any number of reasons why, "No, I don't think so," or "I can't," they're not the enemies of God. But you can still pray the prayer of Nehemiah, "God, strengthen our hands." Here's what's going to happen. Maybe you feel vulnerable to ask somebody, "Hey, can you go with me to meet this newcomer, this visitor?" But I promise you that far more often than no, you're going to hear the answer yes. And if you hear the answer no, 99.9% sure there's a reason why. It's a good reason. Don't be discouraged. Be resilient. Oxford students who are studying criminal law have been told that they can leave lectures if they find the crimes that are being covered upsetting. These potential lawyers now have the option of skipping, as it's quote, potentially distressing cases if they don't feel like they're up to it. And so the lecturers must provide trigger warnings, disclaimers, to give students time to leave if they're bothered. Those poor future lawyers. They can't handle the gruesomeness of that case. What's going to happen when they're turned loose and they're actually out there in the courtroom? They won't be able to say, I guess, to the firm, "That's too gruesome. I can't do that." They won't work very long in that profession. We're not facing anything like that. We're facing a potential discouragement. But I'll tell you what, I know God's people, the best people on earth. You're going to find so many that will join you and will share your enthusiasm in reaching out to newcomers and those who are visiting. And so we need a resiliency that will help us to be tough no matter what resistance we encounter. Read James chapter 1, verse 2 through verse 4. Number 4, be convicted. Build a strong desire to include others. What if this church developed a reputation all over the world as the friendliest church that they had ever attended? And can I tell you something? Do you realize that people talk about you? When I was in Denver, Colorado, one of our elders, who's now has a place for some parts of the year over on the other side of Florida, he and his family were down here and they were visiting. And you know, I've talked with you as a result of this class, and there have been a lot of people who've told stories. I don't know if we call them horror stories, but stories that are very similar. Where you go into an assembly and you sit down, and maybe you come in a little bit late on purpose. And I've had it happen to me, where you go in and you sit down and you feel invisible. And people are very friendly with each other. I have been to congregations, several hundred members, and not one said anything. Back to Dean. Dean came and worshiped and visited with you guys. Dean Murphy's his name. It probably registers with none of you. He was bombarded in a good way by your friendliness. He came all the way back into an elders meeting and was talking about how impressed he was with how so many different people of different ages had come up to him. It may have been you. It may have been somebody else not in this room. But you've got a reputation. But wouldn't you like to be known as the friendliest congregation among God's people, among any people in the world? What if that started out in the parking lot and was picked up at the door, and it was carried through to the welcome center and into the classroom, and it extended out into the auditorium, and it included every interaction with every member? You know, I think that there are some dreams that are more difficult to make a reality than others. But this involves something that all of us can do. You don't need advanced education. You don't need special skill training for that, to go up and say hello. So why should we be convicted to include others in reaching out to visitors and newcomers? I can think of at least three answers. It could mean the salvation of that visitor's soul. And that one soul is worth more to God than all that's in this world. Number two, it could turn the wheels of growth and development in the life of the one that we join hands with. Have you ever thought about that if you find somebody to encourage to be involved in this ministry of helping to be church friendly, that it might be the difference maker? They might have been secretly struggling with the idea of falling away from the Lord. Maybe there are things happening in their life that's pulling them away. And by your encouraging them, it might have made all the difference so that they're on the Lord's right hand someday. Number three, it could open up new doors of service. We need to think outside of the box of how to connect others. There are other ways to get people to join hands with us as we reach out to visitors and newcomers. And it's not just recruiting them to shake a hand after church services with those that visit. How about people who are willing to develop content for the web or to help manage the web page? Or how about people willing to keep a database of those who visit or those who are newcomers? Or how about people who are willing to volunteer for the Welcome Center or to be a door greeter? Or how about people who are willing to develop a curriculum for a newcomer's class or to contribute to that? Or how about those who are willing to help be in the rotation to help teach that newcomer's class? And how about people who are willing to hand out some kind of gift to a visitor? We started something that we call, we're trying to be real friendly in Colorado. We mug our visitors. We had coffee cups that were made, and one of our members' sons had his own coffee company, made coffee. And we would put a little sample of that coffee down in that mug, and then we divided the congregation of those who were volunteering in this into zones. And we had four shelves in which we had north, east, you know the directions, northwest, southeast, southwest. Okay, all right. Hey, by the way, I are a preacher, I are not a mathematician. I've only got 4 points, so you can do whatever you want to with that fifth one. I don't know my directions either. But anyway, we had folks who lived in one of those four zones, and when a visitor showed up in one of those zones, we put their a copy of their visitor's card with that mug and that coffee, and they went and mugged them. And it was very successful in getting folks to come back. Folks don't mind being mugged. You didn't know that, did you? All right, but if we try to look at things from a heavenly perspective, does God want more people interested in His church? Does He want more people getting more people involved? If so, and you've already said yes twice, and if 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 6 and 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9 seem to suggest it, then we should be more convicted than ever of the need to do it and to get others to help us to do it so that we can be more effective on the whole. I want to close with Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 9, where Solomon said, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when he is alone, for there's not another to help lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be kept warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him, and a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart." The more of us making up the strands of that cord, the stronger that cord is going to be. I want to close with the words of George Barna. He wrote the book, Grow Your Church from the Inside Out. And he wrote, "Not everyone who tries a church is going to feel comfortable there and choose it as his or her spiritual touchstone. The decision not to embrace a particular church does not necessarily mean that the members and the leadership have failed in their mission. We are striving to get the unchurched to make a major transition in their thinking and behavior, and change may be the defining characteristic of our culture, but it still comes with great struggle to the individuals within our culture." Let me say this to what he said. People are looking for a lot of different things, and you don't know when they walk through the door. And it may be that what they're looking for is not what they should be looking for. Now, sometimes our interaction with them can help them to see the deeper, better, bigger picture. And they may have come for something more superficial. I've known folks who've come looking for a husband or a wife, didn't get that, but found the Lord and are thankful that that's what happened. Sometimes there are those who come looking for a handout and they find out something greater, like the lame man in Acts chapter 3. But there are going to be some people who walk through the door, and despite our best efforts, they're not going to be receptive. But let's make sure that that's on them and not on us. God wants us, doesn't He? to be as friendly and as warm and as open as we can be, because we see the bigger picture. And that is that God wants us to be church friendly. Thank you very much.